Hi everyone, it's Ryan Hoover, your host of Product Hunt Radio, where I'm joined by the founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. Today I made a trek down to Sand Hill Road to visit Andrew Chen and Ada Chen at Andreessen Horowitz. Their matching last name is not a coincidence, yes, they are siblings. Andrew is a relatively recent addition to Andreessen Horowitz's team, a general partner focused on consumer and SaaS. Prior to joining the illustrious firm, he led growth teams at Uber, and before that was the CEO of Kickball Labs, which built consumer apps reaching tens of millions of users. He's also a prolific writer with more than 650 essays over the past decade, covering startups, growth, and more. It's actually how I met Andrew way back in the day, well before Product Hunt started. Ada Chen has a very unique background, operating at companies with massive scale, such as Mochi Media, LinkedIn, and SurveyMonkey, and early-stage startups as well. Today, she advises several startups and is a COO at NoteJoy, a collaborative notes app for teams that she started with her husband. On the show, we talk about the differences between starting a career at a big company versus a small startup, the increasing popular mullet strategy, and how OKRs can be used with your significant other. But before we jump in, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Airtable. Airtable is an all-in-one collaboration platform that's flexible enough to keep up with the most creative, innovative teams. Whether you're launching a startup, building a product, collecting user feedback, or even recording a podcast. That's why startups like Lambda School and Omni use Airtable to manage their work. In fact, I also use Airtable myself to manage my portfolio of investments, making it easy to track and update on my laptop or mobile phone. Visit airtable.com/producthunt today to get $50 in free credit. Intercom is a tool we've been using since the very beginning of Product Hunt. It powers our customer support and a lot of our outbound messaging. I have Jake on the line, head of support at Product Hunt, to chat more about how we're using Intercom to power drip campaigns for Ship.
Anytime we have something new on the site, we can create these drip campaigns and they automatically trigger and go out to our customers at specific times that we've set and helps them stay informed about the different features on the site and how best to use them and just keeps them up to date on what they need to know.
Visit intercom.com to give it a try. Hey everybody, this is Ryan Hoover with Product Hunt Radio and I'm here at Andreessen Horowitz down in Menlo Park with two people I've known for a little while now, two brothers and sisters, Andrew Chen and Ada Chen. How's it going?
Hi. Yes.
Woo.
This is the first brother and sister duo, hopefully the first of many. So thanks for having me over here. First off, Andrew, you joined Andreessen Horowitz, is it 6 months ago?
Yeah, it's been, I think I'm on month five. So I'm quickly like reaching my half year mark and which has gone incredibly fast.
Nice. Are you completely swamped with meetings and pitches or how has it changed since like before Andreessen Horowitz?
Yeah. So when I was at Uber, I really loved meeting with startups and hearing about new ideas and staying in touch with the tech community, but I could only do it like first thing in the morning and on weekends. And it quickly like filled up my schedule basically. So, it's like I would work at Uber and then I would do that basically. So the idea that I would do the thing that I wanted to do for fun, like as my full-time job, it sort of feels like I've won an ice cream eating competition and like the prize is more ice cream. So it's just, I could just do as much as I want, which is super awesome.
Yeah. And so your background, just maybe for those that aren't super familiar, you were at Uber right before this. And then kind of what's your short version of your history?
Yeah, totally. We were just talking about, so Ada and I, who's my little sister, by the way, I want to clarify.
Thanks.
Yeah. So we grew up in Seattle and we both made our way to the Bay Area. Actually, the funny thing is my first job ever was actually in venture capital. And so, something I did right after college. And then, after that, I ended up working at a series of startups. I moved to the Bay Area 10 years ago to start my own company. I had actually met, Mark and Ben here, and they actually led the seed round for a startup that I was working on during the Facebook platform days. Everyone was working on like crazy viral apps. So I was working on, that kind of thing.
That's around when we met.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's exactly. That's right around when we met. And they invested out of Horowitz Andreessen, angel fund, which was like, really funny because that would have been like H16N.
Yeah.
Yeah. So different. Anyway, I met the men and I worked on that for a while and ended up basically deciding that it would be better to go to a, larger organization, ended up at Uber, running various growth teams there. And so I spent 3 years there, like really, really fun experience.
Probably pretty wild too.
Right. Yeah. First 18 months was like really, really incredible startup, like hockey stick, everything. And the last 18 months were very like eventful and everyone's read about it in the news. So I don't have to summarize that.
Yeah. And Ada, you've had a pretty interesting journey at Microsoft, LinkedIn, SurveyMonkey, and then a two-person startup with your husband.
Yeah. Actually, multiple two-person startups, as well as I spent some time in the game space as well at Mochi Media. So after I graduated from college, I was in Seattle at Microsoft for a year. And Microsoft at the time, I think, was around 80,000, 100,000 employees. I probably don't have the count right. And very, very structured, worked in the ad center space and the online advertising space when search marketing was just becoming a thing. And exactly 367 days or so later, you know, moved out to the Bay Area in 2007. And so worked at a tiny little startup that had just raised Series A called Mochi Media, which was an online games ad network, and spent multiple years there after it was ultimately acquired by Shonda Games. And then actually started my first company, which was a contact management app called Connected. So it was all about contact management without the works. So we raised some funding for that, ultimately sold it to LinkedIn. And, you know, I had my experience sort of joining LinkedIn as a company that was really maturing at the time, right? They had just had their IPO. There were about 1,700 employees and experienced hypergrowth for the first time, focused on things like relaunching Connected as LinkedIn Contacts, growth, learning a lot about subscriptions and consumer SaaS, and was recruited out of that to work at SurveyMonkey, where I was SVP of marketing, and then recently left a couple years back to start a new company. And that's actually a husband-wife team, and with Sach and Reiki. And we started a company called NoteJoy, which is a collaborative notes app for teams. And so we're really focused on, you know, how do we actually create a fast and focused workspace for teams that gets them out of the noise of chat and email?
Yeah, like team collaboration and productivity is so important, because if you can even improve collaboration and efficiency within a team by like even just 10%, it can have such a huge impact on, you know, both your productivity, but also even just like your joy.
Oh, absolutely.
Which maybe is part of the reason for the name, NoteJoy. I don't know.
Yep, exactly. That was actually part of the inspiration behind the name. And, you know, it's one of those things where even when you go to a small team, like small tight-fitting teams or larger organizations, you see this friction today that still exists when it comes to communication and collaboration. And, you know, just think about how many decrepit, out of date wikis you see and Google Docs that are sort of lost in the ether, and then people joining and getting forwarded random emails from way back when, because that's the only place the knowledge lives. You know, we're really thinking about how do we create something that tackles that. And, you know, productivity has always been a huge space where I've been passionate about.
This is a really broad question, but what's it like working at such a big company like LinkedIn and Microsoft and others to now just you and your husband?
Yeah. I mean, it's hugely different. And I think the biggest dimension where I would say working at a large company versus a small startup is different is that effective execution looks completely different. It's a night and day difference. So when you're executing at a small startup or a small team, or, you know, even just by yourself, it really comes down to ideating, picking and prioritizing, and then rolling up your sleeves and getting things done, right, as quickly as possible from an execution pace. When it comes to working at a large company, it's actually much more cerebral, right? And it's much more in the heart. You're actually thinking about how do you communicate and collaborate across a cross-functional group of teams to get the initiative done. So can you communicate what it's about? Can you motivate people to get it done? Can you manage all of the working pieces? And, you know, the irony of it is that sometimes when you're working on projects with large scale, because the skill set is so different, it actually feels like you're not doing anything at all yourself. You're actually merely managing the appendages of all the other groups and trying to make sure that everyone's staying on track and executing. And so, you know, as organizations scale, like the execution work around, you know, how much collaboration it takes gets orders of magnitude greater in terms of how hard it is to get everyone aligned and marching in the same direction versus one person. And so, you know, I really think that that's one of the biggest differences. Like, you go to a startup to learn how to do things, right? And maybe not very well. Yeah. And, you know, you go to a large company to kind of see how things are done really well, but across a broad range of disciplines and functions, and, you know, really see how the whole thing comes together as an engine sort of humming smoothly and operating.
You mentioned communication as like one, I guess, skill or trait of people in larger companies. And like, Andrew, you used to blog. I mean, you still do, but you used to blog a lot. That's largely how I think you built pretty massive following over the past, I don't know, decade or so writing.
Right.
How did you even get into writing to begin with?
So first, I love writing. You know, that's kind of the very first thing. And I was always one of these, you know, teenagers where I kept a journal and I would write in it and delete it and then, you know, start a new one and just, you know, and that literally I was the only audience kind of thing. I just enjoyed it myself. And so before starting my current professional blog, I think I had three other blogs that I had started over the years, just basically, you know, just getting going and then deleting them and just not really sticking with it over time.
Why did you delete the previous blog?
You know, because you get bored with it, you know, and you're just kind of okay, I'm done, mm-hmm. you know, kind of thing. And then I think on those, it was literally, you know, it's who's reading it? It's Ada, you know,
yeah.
My parents, you know, my friends.
But a fun fact on Andrew's early blogs, he would actually forcibly subscribe us to the emails to make right. sure that we wouldn't miss anything.
Right. That was before some of the ICANN, I think, email laws, and certainly before GDPR.
GDPR, yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, I think you know, don't tell a 20-year-old who they can subscribe to a blog or not. So I really enjoyed that. And then when I moved to the Bay Area 10 years ago, what I basically decided to do was I was I'm going to write down everything that I'm learning, and I'm just going to start, you know, going at it. And so the funny thing, I was learning so much in my first year that I was just writing a lot of kind of pretty random snippets, you know, some of it would be a paragraph or two. And I would do it you know, maybe twice a week or something like that. So pretty often. And that's actually how I met, you know, Mark Andreessen originally. It turned out that he somehow randomly, I think had stumbled on my blog via Hacker News. And then through that, you know, had ended up, you know, seeing some of my content, and then he cold emailed me, and that's how I met him, you know, in 2007. So it was pretty random and amazing, you know, adventure. And so, but at the time, I was a entrepreneur in residence. I was a 24-year-old entrepreneur in residence, actually across the street from here, which is really funny. And, you know, one of the things that my colleagues would tell me is they would say why are you, you know, wasting your time? You know, blogging, you're giving away all your best ideas, right? What are you doing? Right. These are the secrets that you're going to use to understand, you know, the thing. And at the time I was well, I'm never going to be a venture capitalist. So it doesn't matter. And so as a result, I'm just going to give away all this stuff. And then, you know, and it's obviously so ironic now that you know, so much of the job is obviously, you know, sharing your ideas and giving back to the community via Twitter and Medium and, writing essays and all that stuff.
Now it's the norm.
But yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In fact, it was it would have been considered very contrarian, I think, to actually share, you know, a bunch. But anyway, so I've kept it up. And so I think, you know, I'm in well into the, you know, many, many hundreds of essays, you know, over 10 years. And I think at times taken a hiatus, you know, I think I took a 2-year hiatus in the middle, but I think my goal now is really to publish regularly, but to do it at kind of a high level of quality and to go deeper into ideas and to sort of break new concepts and new kinds of data, you know, to the community versus literally the early days. It was it'd be 500 words, what did I learn today kind of thing.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a little tie into that a little bit. You mentioned a term called, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was something along the lines of mullet startups. Is that correct? Or do you remember that?
Go ahead.
There was a tweet in a conversation with you and some others around the distributed nature of companies and where companies being founded today.
Yeah, okay, mullet. Okay, yes, that's what you said. Yeah, mullet startups.
Yes.
Yeah,
I like it. It was a very catchy term because it's a trend that we've identified. Right. Product Hunt is a mullet startup, I guess. Like, we're headquartered in San Francisco, but we have a distributed team.
So The Economist, you know, cover for this week is, you know, peak valley, you know, is it over in Silicon Valley, blah, 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 right? So I think there's been a lot of really interesting, you know, dialogue around that. I think, you know, and obviously a lot of it has to do with housing in the Bay Area. Anyway, there's so much to unpack there, right? But I think that one of the reactions to it has been that we see many companies, you know, with their leadership and their executives in the Bay Area. But when it comes to, you know, hiring engineers and designers and, you know, all sorts of other folks, then they're much more likely to distribute those, you know, the team, you know, anywhere, right? And so, yeah, to your point, that's, you know, this is sort of the mullet, you know, because it's sort of business in the front and party in the back,
yeah,
you know, kind of thing. And I think it's fascinating because it is actually just the reverse of, you know, one of the models that we've seen over the years where, for example, you'll have a really strong, you know, technical team out of Paris or out of Israel or out of Singapore. And they'll get started, they'll get funded, and then they'll realize, okay, hey, all of our customers are in the US. Let's move the CEO and the sales and marketing, you know, function to the Bay Area. And so you end up with the, you know, the mullet, but just like kind of, but now you do it in reverse, right? So I think that's like a pretty interesting, you know, reverse mullet. Yeah. Which is like kind of an interesting, like, you know, trend these days.
Yeah. So it's just you two right now, Ada, at NoJoy. But if you were to, let's say, need to hire 10 people tomorrow, how would you approach it? Would you hire in the Bay Area or would you go remote?
Yeah. I mean, that's actually a fascinating question because it's something that we've debated and thought about because things have changed so much, not only from the costs, but then also, you know, what is the ability for you to access and interact with people at scale, you know, if they're located in other places. We actually talked to this close friend of mine who's a founder who built his company and has scaled it to revenue, pretty substantial revenue in the Bay Area. And he basically said to us, if I were to do it again, I believe that Silicon Valley is the worst place to self-fund a company or to start a company or, you know, even have funding and try to build a team. And, you know, the biggest challenge that he was having was actually access to talent. You know, I think it would really depend. I think, on one hand, I think we have really strong networks within the Bay Area. And so it would be possible to kind of peel people off. And that's really how many startups start with their founding team, right? They pull people that they respect, that they work with, that, you know, have shared belief in to kind of create that initial nucleus of a team. And that gets you to your first couple headcount, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe we can get to 10 that way. But I do think that now when it's coming to scale, like, yeah, we would definitely be looking very closely at, could we build a remote team and create a really distributed workforce for NoJoy?
I think, you know, one of the distinctions is, do you hire a lot of folks who are doing the kind of individual contributor work versus the managers? Because I do think that it ends up being really hard once you want to find the engineering director that's managed, you know, 200 engineers, right? To find that elsewhere, you know, versus it being, you know, kind of a main thing. So there's a really interesting thing about cities, right? Which is like, if you graph the population of cities and sort of like, you know, stack rank them, you'll see that there's a power law in it. And like the biggest cities are really, really, really big. And then there's this like, there's this long tail of all these like little tiny cities. And the reason for that is that there's really like a network effect, you know, within cities, right? Like, you know, whether it's show business in LA or it's, you know, finance in New York, like these ecosystems that emerge happen because, you know, you end up with, you know, the designers are here because the engineers are here, because the marketing people are here, because the, you know, the capital is here, because, you know, and on and on and on, and, you know, all in one place. And so one of my colleagues here at Andreessen Horowitz, Darcy, had mentioned, he tweeted the idea that, you know, one of two things will happen, right? Either these network effects will continue to hold, meaning that then, you know, actually the Bay Area will just continue to, you know, be what it is, right? Or we actually make really interesting structural shifts in how we organize teams and, you know, workforces and all that stuff, in which case the network effects become less strong. But what that means is not that then all of a sudden, you know, some other city like becomes a quote unquote the next Silicon Valley. It actually just means that everyone just lives where they want to live. And, you know, and that's that, right? And so if you believe that thesis, then you'd actually say there is no quote unquote next Silicon Valley. It either just continues or, you know, it'll just be distributed, right? I think that's like a pretty interesting.
Yeah. And I think you see that already emerging even within online communities, right? So when you think about where is the discourse actually taking place, right? You know, it's taking place on Medium, it's taking place on Twitter, it's taking place on Product Hunt. You know, we went through the experience of launching on Product Hunt and we were really amazed by how international the community was in contrast to the earlier Startup Connected that we'd done only, you know, several years before. That, you know, it may not be as important in the future for everyone to be physically co-located in the same space.
Yeah. I'm super fascinated by this space and I'm looking to invest in and actually committed to investing in a company that's rethinking how people communicate with a distributed and remote team via video. Because we have a lot of different tools out there like Zoom and Google Hangouts and others, and they all kind of are utilities. They're not much different from each other. It's just like a big screen with, you know, your face on it. And they're rethinking in a world where everyone is distributed or a group of people are distributed and another group of people are working from their home, how do you communicate more effectively? Yeah, I find it an interesting trend. I think one observation too, I think, is that the mullet strategy can work really well if your home base is where your customers are. So like you said, Andrew, earlier, like if you're building an entertainment company, it's probably good to have connections and live in LA so that you can be around those people. And that can create a lot of serendipity and business partnerships and so on. But you don't necessarily need your entire team there. You can also have them around the world if you can build like a culture that can facilitate working effectively remote. I'm pro remote if it makes sense for your company. Just, I mean, I'm slightly biased now. It's been 5 years now with product and running a distributed.
Yeah, I think what's hard is that, you know, basically there are there's a whole class of interactions where being in person is actually better. Right. And so if you're meeting people for the first time in a partnership type scenario or sales kind of scenario or an investing kind of scenario, like, you know, you do want to go old school. You do want to see the other, you know, person. And so I think in those cases, that's actually where the network effects actually kick in. Right. Where then it's like, okay, yeah, let's get everyone clustered together then, you know, in those cases.
And SF in particular is so dense. I mean, granted, I'm driving down to Menlo, but it's a small, short trip. Whereas LA and other New York as well, it's actually hard to have a lot of meetings within, you know, a 5 hour period because everyone is distributed across different locations. I'm curious to hear from an investing side, are you actively looking at sort of the future of work or distributed teams and looking to invest in companies building for that? Or
yeah, totally. I mean, I think there's a couple different angles on, you know, the future of work that are worth mentioning. So I think one is, I learned a ton of really, really interesting lessons at Uber, but I think one of the most important ones is that there are 80 million hourly workers in America, right? And so these are folks that are often working multiple part-time jobs. You know, they don't have steady sources of income, you know, and what they're often doing is they are driving Uber kind of between their other, you know, things, right? And so I think, you know, when you look at that, you're like, wow, like the future of work has to encompass, you know, that industry, which is, what are all the other kinds of interesting, you know, work that can actually happen? So like just to call out a couple really interesting ones. So, you know, there's a company called VIP Kid, which is, you know, catered towards the consumer side is basically kids in China. And then the supply side of the market is basically often like Midwestern kind of like ex-teachers, like stay-at-home, you know, moms, like that kind of thing. And they're spending time on video together and they're getting this whole experience around, you know, teaching and tutoring. And this is something you can do from your home, like super, super, you know, interesting, right? You know, and you can kind of imagine, obviously, there's that kind of world. There's the world of, you know, obviously lots of really interesting things happening in, you know, real estate, our portfolio company. Airbnb obviously provides a lot of really important, you know, supplemental income, you know, to folks as well.
If your HOA will allow it, I'm speaking from experience, they will not allow me, unfortunately, to rent my place out, but
right.
It's pretty typical.
Right. I think, you know, within all these different kinds of work, there's obviously different rules that need to, you know, like be in place. And that's true for rideshare and that's true for, you know, many other things as well. But I think, you know, that's kind of one notion of a, you know, sort of like future of work that I think is important for us to consider, even though it's sort of outside the like tech bubble a little bit. But, you know, it's a really huge market. I think the flip side is, you know, I've been a on again, off again advisor to Dropbox, you know, for many years. And I've known that team for, you know, well. And, you know, when you look at what, you know, these horizontal products are trying to do, it's sort of like, you know, we're in a world where, you know, if we can get all of these professional white collar workers just make their jobs better, right? And just like make all these workflows, these really complicated workflows that, you know, for the most part are still being managed in, you know, spreadsheets and docs and, you know, like chat and sort of like streamline all that. I think there's tons and tons of opportunity, you know, there in across many different dimensions.
Stick around to the end of this episode for a mini interview with Marian Wu, president of GE Ventures. We talked about how GE Ventures is investing in the future of startups. This podcast is brought to you by Stripe. The best way to know if people like your product is if they'll actually pay for it. But collecting payments on the internet is harder than you might think. Stripe makes it easy for entrepreneurs to turn their ideas into businesses by helping them accept money from anyone, anywhere in the world. So if you're building an internet company and you care about revenue, you should check out Stripe.com.
So let's talk about some apps or products you guys love. Ada, what's on your home screen that people need to know about? Or is there a product you use maybe every day, every week that has bettered your life, changed your life?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I am a huge fan of personal productivity. And so every year I make my New Year's resolutions. And, you know, one of my resolutions, for example, was get to a point where I was working out 3 times a week. And the challenge that I always had was accountability, right, and tracking. And so this is probably not a particularly popular app, but one of my favorite apps for that is actually this iOS app called Habit Share. And it basically lets you share accountability, like share your to-do list, like check, I did it today, and set a goal and like make sure that you're keeping track of how accountable you are against it. I think that I'm a huge fan of that. And then I think Andrew actually introduced me to this app, but I love this app called Captio as well. And it's like a very quick way to email yourself. And you wouldn't think that it's that many taps to email yourself to remember a quick idea. But after you experience it, it's pretty mind-blowing.
Can we just go on a quick tangent about Ada's goal setting strategy?
Yes.
Because so one of the things that Ada
why,
does.
This is why we have brothers and sisters right. on the show.
Yeah. So one of the things that Ada does that's impressive, but also a little bit scary is the level of she actually uses OKRs
in her own personal. Results.
Yeah. Right. There's a whole book about it now in order to, you know, handle her goals. But this is the best part. Her husband also does the same. Sachin also does the same. And they actually will score each other on the OKRs. Do you want to talk about this a little bit?
True story. So both my husband and I love productivity. I mean, this is why we've been spending all of our time working on NoteJoy, but then also, you know, I've spent probably a decade of my life at this point thinking about productivity apps. And so OKRs is actually something that we've adopted as a process from LinkedIn, which originally came from Google, which originally came from what company before that? It's widely adopted. Right. You know,
John Dewar wrote a book about it recently.
Yeah, that's right. And so with objectives and key results, you know, we actually found that it was a really good way of establishing goals that are both measurable as well as very distinct, right? Specific. Mm-hmm. And so we actually do annual OKRs on a personal level, whether it's around like personal infrastructure, like fitness or house or relationship.
Right, but do you have like a KR that's like hang out with friends three times per month?
Kind of. Yeah, yeah. So I actually had a reconnection OKR at one point where I basically made a list of people, 50 people that brought me joy, that I was like really engaged with, always wanted to get to know better. You know, the bar was basically just interesting and that I hadn't spoken to in 4 to 6 months. And, you know, then the goal was basically to take a 1 month period and meet with half of them. And it was actually one of the most energizing and transforming goals that I'd had, because it was a great way to kind of have a focused effort at reconnecting with people and building relationships. And yes, it is. And we score each other on it. So we actually have business OKRs in terms of managing the business that we do on a quarterly basis. And then I have annual OKRs around some of my goals, such as like learning a new skill or whatever else that I do. Thanks for bringing that up.
I do not use OKRs to score anything in my life. Do you?
No, not really. I mean, that is extremely nerdy, but I also am inspired. I'm kind of inspired because the beauty of OKRs is when you craft the right OKRs, it's one, it's like binary. Like you pass it or you didn't. And a lot of people, they set goals like New Year's resolutions and they're like, I want to work out more. And that's their goal. And they end up not actually pursuing it oftentimes, in part because it's not specific. It's like, well, does that mean you need to work out 3 times a week minimum, you know, for the rest of the year? And what are your goals and what are your outcomes expectations out of that?
Right,
I love it.
Right.
I love
that. Yeah. So I've tapped into this Habit Share app in addition to that. And, you know, specifically with the fitness goal, it was actually, you know, Q1 was like, okay, get to once a week. Q2 mm-hmm. was get to twice a week. Q3 is at 3 times a week. And so that's actually how I've been tracking and achieving it.
Love it.
Okay. So one of my favorite things on Twitter is I try to do this at least once a year where I will just screenshot my home screen and then I'll just ask everybody else to just do the same and then like reply. And it's really cool. It's actually like a really, you know, because first of all, it's a very personal thing what your home screen is. And so I always have to look at it and be like, is there anything like weird on here? I don't want, you know,
stealth beta companies.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Stuff like that. Exactly. And then similarly, like looking at other people's home screens are really interesting. Like occasionally you'll see people where they'll like sort their home screen by like color. And that's how they organize everything. And I'm just like, that's insane. But it's like, it's pretty cool, you know, in its own. Anyway, so I was going to mention some of the apps that are like on my, you know, home screen these days. So I think, you know, one, so as Ada mentioned, there's an app called Captio, which is great. But you know, to this morning, actually, you had tweeted something that there's the Fin team had come out with a new app called Nota Bene, which is sort of like Captio on steroids. So anyway, so I actually just installed it. I put it on my home screen. I'm actually really excited to, you know, try. And
What does it allow you to do for those that aren't familiar? It's similar to Captio.
Right. So basically, you know, both of these apps, they allow you to, you basically open up the app. there's a blank text screen. You type in whatever you want, and then you just hit like send, and then it just emails you, right? So that's Captio. And then what Nota Bene does is it has a couple more aliases. It has things like, you know, maybe my, I mean, this is something that like I actually really want to need, which is sending to like my work email versus my home email. And then I might do like work email plus like admin, you know, is a thing, right? And so I think that's kind of their fins hook to try to get you, you know, to get kind of get into the workflow, you know, that way. But yeah, so you know, I think that one I use all the time. I was mentioning that, you know, for my first year on the job at Andreessen Horowitz, I moved down to downtown Palo Alto. And so, but I'm spending like 2 days a week in the city. And so one of the things that I'm finding is that, you know, I'm trying different kind of like, you know, solutions for like, oh, you know, if I want a place to hang out and do email, like what should I, you know, use? And so one of the things that I've been, you know, trying out over the last couple months now has been Breather, you know, which lets you rent a conference room that's been, you know, built out and kind of doing meetings there. Another one is Spacious, which just got launched actually, I think in the last, couple weeks. And
I'm actually not familiar with Spacious.
Oh, okay.
So I've heard the name, but I don't know. Yeah.
It's a really cool concept. So what they do is they basically, you know, you have these really high end, you know, restaurants, right? And like they're very nice interiors, all that stuff, but they're basically closed the entire day all the way until like 5 p.m. And so the idea is between 9 to 5 or 8 to 5 or whatever the hours are, can they actually just literally put like one person there and just have like coffee and water and whatever. And then you use the interior of this like beautiful restaurant. And so one of the places in SF is the Press Club, right? Which is this kind of like underground. Yeah, great spot. It's like, you know, it's like tons of space. And so, you know, you can basically just hang out in the Press Club during the day and it's basically completely empty. And it's like, you know, it's pretty
great. How much does it cost typically?
It's like a membership basis. I think it's like $90 a month or something like that.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, sort of alternate. It's in, and they have, you know, they have spots in Coal Valley and Hayes Valley and Castro and a bunch of other places. Another one that's kind of like this, it's like pretty interesting, is I think when I first heard this idea, I like laughed because I thought it was, you know, so funny. But now I actually have like used it in like in a real way, which is a company called Recharge, and that it lets you rent hotels by the minute. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of like, what is the use case for that? It turns out the actual use case. The actual use case is, you know, you need a place to make a phone call, right? And so in the same way that like Breather or Spacious, you know, it's like, it's sort of like, oh, well, you have all this like built-in inventory and like maybe you hold out a room, you know.
Or maybe you need a shower. Some people are flying, traveling. I just need in between meetings.
Exactly.
Been
exactly.
2 days, I'm stinky.
Right, right. And then you can pay like 1/4 the price of a hotel, you know, and like that actually is like kind of useful, you know, for it. So anyway, those are fun. I think I'm now trying one of these like kind of almost on a weekly basis, which has been, you know, pretty cool. We're going to talk about Reddit a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I'm so like a Reddit daily active user. Like I check it all the time. Like I'd probably check it not as often as Twitter, but it's like my default like late night read. Like I want to just like chill out.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like,
you can turn your brain off. It's different,
you
know, than Twitter. It's different than any other community. I actually got a pre-release book by Christine, she's been writing about this for years now, but the history of Reddit. It's about 400 or 500 pages long.
You would enjoy
it.
Well, I just bought Alexis's book that he had written a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So yeah. Okay. Great. So then that'll be another, you know, good one. Yeah. I mean, I find, you know, it's like, I've been into Reddit for like several years now, but it's funny. Like one of my good friends, Noah Kagan, was literally like, you need to go to your favorite subreddits and sign up and follow and actually set up your Reddit. And then it's amazing.
Kind of like Twitter.
Set up your Twitter. Right, right. And I think I'd like didn't get it because I would go to the homepage and I would kind of be like, well, this is kind of like fun. Is this like another cat memes, you know, website or whatever, right? So anyway, so like I love it. And then I think the one that I want to recommend that folks start out with is actually if you just go to the best of subreddit. So it's like reddit.com/r/best of. Then it basically just links to some of the best comments on Reddit over the last like 24 hours. And then you can actually sort it by like, you know, like the last month or something like that. So I think anyway, that's a good one. But yeah, I follow a ton of different, you know, subreddits at this point. The other one I really like is First World Anarchists. And that's basically, you know, when you have like a sign that's like, don't step here. And then someone takes a photo, like they're stepping in the grass or whatever. That's like my kind of like rule breaking. So it's like very minor infractions that, you know, like that's make you feel like vibe. A badass.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah. So there's that. And then the one last thing I'll mention is Bose Quiet Comfort, like the wireless noise canceling things. As I've been commuting from SF and Palo Alto are like amazing. And so they actually have an app that lets you like adjust, you know, how much noise cancellation you want. Cool. So I use it all the time. It's like,
and these are just going to your ear, right? Kind of like AirPods.
Right, right. You actually wear it, like the battery actually hangs on your neck.
Oh.
And then they go into your ear. Yeah, exactly. So they're not over ear. They're the ones that go in. And so I have both, right? And so, but yeah, I prefer this one the most and I like, you know, bring it with me everywhere at this point.
Do you live on Reddit at all, Ada?
I'm probably a weekly active user. Yeah. I check in and I just like to see the best of and see what people are talking about. But you're right. I mean, it's just such a... It's such a passive way to kind of see a lot of interesting content stream by.
What's also nice about Reddit, in a world where content is delivered by algorithms and people you follow and things like that, like on Twitter and Facebook and so on, it's kind of refreshing to go to a place like Reddit where you can get out of your bubble and you can explore the weirdest stuff if you really want to.
Right.
And
right.
And it's not socially curated, or it's not personally curated necessarily to like everything that Reddit knows about you, but it's really a community of people geeking out about this stuff. One of my favorite subreddits, I don't visit Reddit all that often. I try to actually avoid it because it's kind of a rabbit hole. But one subreddit I love is called The Internet is Beautiful. And what you'll find there is actually a lot of really weird projects and internet websites and like little hacks that people are building. And it's almost always delightful. You go there and find something weird, just some crazy website that someone created. And the name The Internet is Beautiful is just such a wonderful feeling. It's really, really well-crafted subreddit. Cool. Thanks for having me over here, by the way. Is there anything else you'd like to plug? Anything in the portfolio, maybe, Andrew, or anything at NoteJoy? I know, I gotta give you a chance.
Well, it's funny. We were talking about how when you were just signing into at Andreessen Horowitz, I was like, oh, you should install the Envoy app.
Yeah.
Because it makes it so much easier. You literally get a photo of your face on it and you just like tap on it and then like, you know, and you go in. It works over Bluetooth. So anyway, so I always like to plug that.
It's Envoy's one of our portfolio companies. Envoy's a cool, I was mentioning this earlier, but we didn't get into it. Is Envoy such an interesting company? I'm fascinated by social graphs. And when you look at the uniqueness of a social graph like Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, and I think some of the most interesting ones that are less talked about is one, like Slack is very interesting. Like the people that are in your Slack team are the people that you actually work with. No one else has access to that sort of graph right now. And Envoy is also really fascinating. It's like a graph of the people and business partners and people that you're meeting at your company.
Right.
It's
right.
Like no one else has that.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I think, you know, wouldn't surprise you to know that the CEO, Larry, was actually a really early employee at Twitter. Right. And so a lot of the sort of thinking around both the product experience and just like, so like how nice it is, right? As, you know, sort of like, you know, I think we've gotten to this whole trend now where, your office and your office experience is this like extension of your brand. And so now people like really care about it. Like, and so they don't want like this like kind of kludgy, like pen and paper, you know, kind of thing. And so then that like product experience is so important. But, you know, to your point on that, you know, the graph is like, totally agree. I think that's also one of the reasons why it's like, you know, Envoy is pretty special in sort of the pantheon of these like B2B, you know, companies in that it actually grows virally. Literally, like the way that the company grows is that people experience it and they're like, wow, this is really nice. And then as soon as they go back to their office, they're like, we should have one, right? And like, you know, and there's really not that many, you know, products that grow that way. It's like Dropbox grows that way, Slack grows that way. It's like a viral B2B thing. And so I think, you know, in the same way, it's like that, you know, that graph means that not only is it spreading virally and enables that spread, but then, you know, the other part I think is, wow, okay, cool. Like you get a list of all the people that are visiting and, you know, who they're visiting. And then that can then feed into like all your other, like, you know, kind of your offline. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Right. Your CRM and like all, you know, so it's, you can take your offline data and turn it into online stuff. And it's another, you know, touch point, which is super important.
You don't have Envoy at the headquarters, do you, Ada?
Nope.
I think she has a doorbell.
Yeah. Yeah. Old school doorbell style. Yeah. What's down the pipe?
What's new on the pipe is that we've actually been doing a ton of mobile enhancements. And so we're actually bringing Android very soon. in terms of bringing it out as an app. And so it's interesting now because the bar for consumer and business apps is so much higher than it used to be, right? Like it's actually really important to be fully multi-platform. So we've always had Mac and PC and then the browser and we've had iOS, but it's really exciting to actually bring that to Android because that's been a big factor for a lot of teams that are trying to adopt NoJoy as an overall group. And so yeah, just cranking and hard at work.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on. So, this will be the first of hopefully many brother, sister, Product Hunt radio shows. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Marian. Thanks for joining us on Product Hunt Radio. And thanks to GE Ventures for making this possible. GE Ventures is investing in the new industrial revolution. And that means Marian works with all kinds of startups solving under the radar business problems.
When you look at your past background in other venture roles and what you're doing at GE Ventures, how is it different?
A lot of it is the same. It's really all about what are big market trends? How do new startups with new business models, new technologies, new products, how do they create those trends? How do they take advantage of those trends to really get big footprint in market? So those pieces of startup venture investing, 100% the same. The part that's different is now I have the scale and weight of GE behind me. So where there is mutual fit between those companies and GE, we can really leverage GE commercial channels, GE research, GE overall capabilities to help those companies grow.
Is there a particular space or industry that you're really excited about to invest in or at least explore?
The big trend that we're focused on is digital capability disrupting traditional industry. So if you think about, you know, what's happened in the last 10 years, we've completely revolutionized commerce, media, communications, finance over a longer period of time. But if you look at more, let's call them physical or operational industries, they're barely touched by technology. You know, in the consumer space, we see this starting with all the new capabilities around automotive, right? Self-driving cars, ride sharing, real-time mapping and route planning. You can see all of that in the consumer space, but those capabilities intersecting into manufacturing, energy, and sort of larger mobility, intersecting into healthcare, they're pretty nascent. They really haven't penetrated very far yet. So there's massive opportunities to bring that same capability into these more traditional industries.
Thanks again, GE Ventures, for making this interview possible. GE Ventures invests in startups that develop transformational technologies to solve big problems. Visit ge.com/ventures to learn more.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, share the podcast with your friends on Twitter and tag a guest you'd like to hear in a future episode. See you soon.